Good evening. I'm Gina Giambattista, event manager, and I'm here representing Cornell University. I welcome you to this evening's presentation. On behalf of the university, I wish to remind all participants that Cornell values responsible speech and expression and the maintenance of public order. Specifically, our campus code states freedom to express oneself and to be heard, and freedom to assemble and lawfully protest peacefully are essential to academic freedom. These rules apply to all persons on the campus or using its buildings. Quite simply, the speaker has a right to speak without intimidation, and the audience has a right to hear what the speaker has to say. The code further states, those who dislike what an invited speaker is saying also have rights. Also, those who oppose a speaker may make their views known so long as they do not thereby interfere with the speaker's ability to be heard or the rights of others to listen. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to review this important information.
Good evening. My name is Alvaro Salas, and I'm the president of the Cornell Public Affairs Society. For today, please be sure to send your questions to the email on my back. We have also a live stream audience, so I send my regards. The Cornell Public Affairs Society is the organization that represents the diverse student body of the Master of Public Administration. It's the program that we have at the Cornell Institute for Public Affairs that I'm proudly a member. I'm deeply honored tonight to be introducing one of the most distinguished presidents in Latin America, President Ricardo Martinelli. I'm happy to see also good friends in the audience. And I want to first thank you, Ricardo Chen and Bart, for being here tonight. And I also want to first thank some of the many people who made this special event possible tonight. From the Cornell Institute for Public Affairs, Lisa Lennox, Judy Metzger, and Cheryl Miller. From the Office of the Provost for International Relations, Alice Pale, Lori Damiani, and Gina Giambattista. From the Marinaudi Center for International Studies, Professor Timothy DeVuc, Heike Michelsen, and Professor Gustavo Flores and Catherine Reynolds for their support. From the Johnson Graduate School of Management, Dean Sumitra Dutta and Professor Lourdes Casanova. Also, I want to thank Wesley Sine, Richard Coyle, and Arcangel Cordero. I want to specially thank Professor Thomas O'Toole, Executive Director of the Cornell Institute for Public Affairs, Professor Rick Geddes, Professor Joe Grasso, core faculty of the program, my classmates at the Master of Public Administration, and also my classmates in our different programs in the university. Particularly, I want to thank the Cornell Police and my colleague and friend Greg Jetty for all his hard work, support, and guidance. Without your leadership, this will not be possible. And I also want to thank my wife and my friends to being supportive and flexible. There are many aspects of the life and presidency of Ricardo Martinelli that could be focused on in an introduction of this leader. There is his remarkable success as a businessman who, from small beginnings, built the largest chain of supermarkets in the country of Panama and served as the head of the Chamber of Commerce. There is also his success in public administration, where he served as Panama Director of Social Security and as a chairman of the Board of Directors of the Panama Canal Authority, one of the biggest construction projects in the world. In addition, there is his success in politics, where he started a political party in early 2000s, and by 2009, he won the presidency with over 60% of the vote. And there is, of course, the remarkable economic success he has achieved as president, to the point where Panama now has the highest economic growth rate in Central America and is ranked number two behind only Chile in terms of competitiveness by the World Economic Forum in the Latin American region. However, what I want to focus on my introduction tonight is none of those impressive accomplishments, as impressive as all they are. Instead, I want to focus on another aspect of President Martinelli's life and legacy that is special to me. That is President Martinelli's remarkable lifelong dedication to education. This man believes in the transformative power of education. In fact, that is one of the reasons why I'm here at Cornell today standing in front of you. I first met the President Martinelli in Panama in 2009 when I was living there as a businessman representing a company from my country, Costa Rica. It was President Martinelli who convinced me that if I wanted to advance and serve a higher purpose in Central America, I needed more education, and I needed to pursue a master's degree. Inspired by the president's advice and other supporters, I attended and graduated from President Martinelli's alma mater in CAE Business School, the best business school in Latin America and one of the best ones in the world. Inspired by that educational experience at INCAE, I began to dream to the impossible of going the next step and trying to get into a master's program in public administration in an Ivy League school in the United States, such as Cornell. President Martinelli encouraged me to go for this dream, even though we knew it was against the odds. And amazingly, I found that sometimes your educational dreams can come true if you are determined enough, and so here I am today. As he always said, Alvaro, we have to fight one more round. And I would not be here without President Martinelli pushing me to pursue higher education. My story, however, is just one tiny example in the history of Ricardo Martinelli relentlessly pushing education at every level throughout his life as the secret to both personal and national success. He graduated from the University of Arkansas back in 1973 with a bachelor in business administration, and then he received his master's at INCAE in Nicaragua and Costa Rica in 1986. After he became a very successful man, a businessman, he started a charitable foundation that has given millions of dollars to poor students for scholarships. More recently, he established the Ricardo Martinelli Scholarship Fund at his alma mater, University of Arkansas. As president of Panama, he has relentlessly focused on education. He has significantly increased the education budget of the government, always with a special focus on trying to narrow the gap between the private education and public education in Panama. He has worked to modernize the curriculum of the public schools and brought free internet and free laptops to the students to improve the quality of their education and lay the foundation for the 21st century workforce that we need in Latin America. The dropout rate in primary school in Panama has practically been cut in half during his presidency, in half. And now President Martinelli brings his passion for education here to Cornell. He brings his passion to the Cornell Institute for Public Affairs and the Cornell community with an official state visit and signing an MOU that will establish a Panama Cornell Fund to send outstanding Panamanian civil servants to our MPA program and the different programs among the university, hopefully. They will receive a master's degree and will also have financial support of Panamanians that have limited financial means so they can attend the SIPA program and be able to return to Panama and to help build their country and Central America with an Ivy League education such as the one we have here. So without further ado, tonight here at Cornell, which is one of the greatest educational institutions in the world, I would like to introduce President Ricardo Martinelli, one of the greatest education leaders in Latin America. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you very much. Honorable Alice Pell, Vice Provost for the International Relations, Honorable Thomas O'Toole, Executive Director of Cornell Institute for Public Affairs, Honorable Rick Geddes, Professor of the Department of Policy Analysis and Management, Honorable members of the Cornell Institute of Public Affairs, Honorable Sumitra Dutta, Dean of the Johnson School of Management, distinguished members of the Panama delegation, Honorable Laura Damiani, Director of International Initiative, Office of the Province for International Relations, Honorable Richard Coyle, Executive Director, Emerging Markets Institute and Senior Lecturer, Management of the Johnson Graduate School. Dear friends, dear students, first of all, I would like to thank Cornell University for the wonderful opportunity that they have provided by signing today of a very important agreement with the Republic of Panama. It will be very important, and it will change the life of many Panamanians that will be able to come to Cornell. And coming to Cornell, it was very difficult for me because last night I had a hell of a hard time trying to get in here. And it's the same way is for you. It has been very difficult for all of you to be admitted at this wonderful school. So it's very easy to come in. It's very hard to come in and very easy to come out. So I'm very sure that you all of you are studying very hard to become the future citizens of the U.S. and whatever country you may happen to be. I have been involved in politics for the last probably 17 or 18 years, and I went into politics because my country, I thought, wasn't run in the proper way. I am a businessman. I come from the business sector, and I am not the regular politician that you find and you see on television. As a matter of fact, I am very different than any regular politician. And the reason why I went into politics was because I wouldn't hire any, at least in my country, and I please do not make a representation to the United States or any other country. In my country, I wouldn't hire any of them to run an ice cream parlor, and they were running my country. They were putting my taxes. They were telling me and the rest of the country what to do. And that's something that I couldn't support. I couldn't support because we have a small country with great opportunities, and we're missing the opportunity to become a country that provides the well-being of its citizens. I come from a background of immigrants that came to Panama over 100 years ago. And I had the opportunity of going to a military high school in Virginia. And that probably was a turning point of what happened to me. And I want to tell you this because it's a true life story that will help you in your future life. In a military high school, it's a very tough environment. You have to be very tough. Hazing is whenever you go, they begin you by shining shoes. You know, you have to do a very good shoe shiner, otherwise you are going to have a hard time. I promised myself that I was never going to shine shoes, and I have never done it after that. I would spit and put my feet backwards and try to clean my shoes. And one time, in one Saturday, I was in school, and there was a big football player who had some boxing gloves, and he was saying, "Who wants to fight with me?" Everybody was fighting with him. He was beating everyone. So I was 14, 15 years old. I decided I was the one who was going to fight the guy. What a mistake. I put the gloves, and the guy hit me so hard that I was trying to grab him and running all over the boxing match, the boxing, you know, the square. And when I went out, I said, "Take my gloves, I am quitting." And someone came to me and told me, "Hey, always fight one more round." And that struck me, you know, it was like Popeye eating spinach, you know. So this, I gotta go and fight again. I went back and I got beaten, you know. They beat me so bad. But that small event changed my life. And that event proved me that whatever you want in life, you can accomplish. And I want to convey this message to you, because in life, nobody's perfect. We all make mistakes. Perfection is only in heaven. God is the only one who is perfect. We all make mistakes. We all have downfalls. But in life, you have to fight that one more round. And the reason why I'm telling you this is because I also ran for president ahead of time, which was mentioned by Alvaro. And I ended up in the year 2004, I ended up so bad. I ended up behind the ambulance, the last one. I had 5.2% of the total vote. But that day, I was so excited, you know, when the day, because I was very upcoming and I'm gonna win. All the polls, you know, mentioned that I was gonna be the last one, the lagger. Yeah. So that day I got up in the morning and say, gee, they are all mistaken. They're gonna see that I am the best, and today they're gonna change their mind and they're gonna vote for me. How wrong I was. I ended up last. But that day, since that day on, say, I'm gonna continue my struggle, I'm gonna go and fight for it. And I went back, and since that day, I went up and fought my way through the politics. Because in Panama, there were two parties, like the Republicans and the Democrats. And they keep alternating each other in power. And I wanted to be like a Ross Perot, and you know what happened to Ross Perot. He lost two times. And I went and fought in the system. And I was still in 2008, 2009, I still wasn't doing very good. I had a very high approval rating. Like it was mentioned, I have a foundation whereby we give scholarships to poor kids. And that transformed me. And to tell you the truth, being a businessman, and it's very difficult to become president of a country, because businessmen are seen as persons who want to grab and want to have everything for them, and they are not seen as they're gonna help the well-being of the poorest people of society. But that helped transform the way that people perceive me as a candidate. Well, I had the opportunity of making a good alliance with some other parties and some other business groups, and from 5.2%, we went up to almost to 61%. And we went into government, and Panama was a country of the half and the have-nots, a country where laws were made to cater or help a particular group of individuals. Let me give you a small example. Banks had an income tax rate, and an effective income tax rate of 7.8%. However, everybody who worked in that bank, from the teller to the manager, would pay 27.5%. Do tell me that's fair. That in no way to be fair. And I can go and give you other examples of what we have done, what happened, and what we did to change the conditions in Panama. We had a fiscal and a tax reform, and that fiscal and tax reform really put some more equality on the tax system. That the first thing also that we did, we went and hired a bunch of guys like you out of school, and we told them. And as a matter of fact, my economic and finance minister is a Cornell grad, and he's a very bright individual, very energetic, and probably you will have one of these days a Cornell grad who becomes president of Panama, because he's on the right path. And we sat down with McKinsey. I had a son that was working for McKinsey, and we decided that we're gonna get McKinsey to come and give us an overview of the economy. And by giving that overview, which as a matter of fact, was done by young people like you, young MBAs, people who were hired. They were paid very little, I imagine. We were charged a lot as a country, but they did a great job in telling us what to do. We have followed McKinsey's recommendations straight to the dot. And that has been very good for us, because now we have the one of the largest growth in the economy of Panama. We have had an annual compound growth rate in the last 3 years of a little over 10%. We have no unemployment. When I told President Obama what I did, he probably thought I was crazy. Say, President Obama, I legalized all illegal immigrants in Panama. You know why? Because I want them to pay taxes. Yeah? It's simple. Remember, this country is very peculiar. Al Capone went to jail for not paying taxes, not for selling booze or killing people. So this is, I always have that in my mind. In order to grow a country that doesn't have a single currency, we don't have a central bank, the only way that we can get money is through taxes or through loans. And loans, you cannot get them as you would like to, because you have certain debt limits that the international agencies force you to have. So by doing that, and by having a very liberal policy whereby we promote the immigration of people to come to Panama and the people to settle in Panama. And as a matter of fact, any American that wants to go to Panama, and this goes true for almost 40 other countries, after staying 30 days, we grant you the permanent residency and the employment permit. So you are just like me or like anyone else. And that has been very good, because we have been able to attract a lot of people who are not doing so good in their countries, especially people from Europe. And by having an economy that is growing, we have been able to achieve many things. Like I was telling in the infrastructure meeting that we had this morning, that most of the countries in the world, they try to promote investment by helping the private companies and giving them special incentives in order for them to invest. That's one approach, but that approach has proved to be wrong, because you only help an individual sector, banking community, or the a port industry, or something in particular that you want to help. What I did is we did completely the opposite. We went out with a massive government infrastructure program in airports, building of roads, schools, airports, jails, and many peripheral markets for the cold chain storage. Because one of the main problems that maybe in the supermarket business, I always, when I imported some products from the United States, I always noticed that they will have a shelf life of 45 days. But if I would buy something locally, it will have a shelf life of 3 days. They say, well, where's the problem? We need to have a cold chain storage, whereby once the farmers harvest the product, has to go into the cold system all the way through until it goes to the supermarket chain. So we got the best advisors, and we began a cold chain storage in order to reduce the price of products, reduce the waste, and of course higher price for the farmer and lower price for the consumer. So we began this basic project that have proof that we were right. And sometimes by doing things that are a little bit odd that the remaining of the people do is when you do best. So we, as a country, we have another thing that we did and was on the study, Panama was considered a fiscal paradise. We went out, we were in all kinds of lists, gray, black, red, all kinds. You know, for being a fiscal paradise, we're supposed to be a tax haven. What we have done is sign double taxation treaties with all the countries that the one we have one with the U.S. Sign a free trade agreements with Europe and the U.S. and plus many other countries, because the only way that you can promote growth is through low taxes and through a market that is open without any trade barriers. Another thing that we have did, we reduced taxes. We reduced taxes for the individual from 27.5% to 15%, exonerating the first 100,000. So if you earn less than 100,000, you pay no tax. If you, after that, you pay 15%. Corporations, we reduce it from 30 to 25%. And the import duties, more or less the average duty is 7.8%, but most of the duties that matter are 10%. So that was also one of my main problems, because many of the people who were smuggling merchandise were my friends. They were my donors to my campaign. So the first thing I did, I got all of them in a room like this and said, look, the box stops here. No more hanky-panky. No more hanky-panky. I want you to start going and being straight. What do you want me to do? So lower tariffs. I reduced tariff, but there were some of them, the usual, smarter than everybody else, that they thought that I was just kidding, that nothing would happen to them. So I nailed three of them, and after nailing the three of them, everybody just went like a soldier, you know, marching across the line. And that's the proof. The other thing I did was there were some very obvious cases of people who were abusing of government property, like a guy who was reclaiming a great portion of Panama's Bay. And we all knew it, but nobody dared to go and tell him that that was wrong. So the first thing we did was to occupy that portion of property, because it was so obvious that he had no permissions. So sometimes you have to lead the way by giving the example. And the example that you guys are getting here at Cornell is a great example. It's a great example because all of you are great leaders, and all of you can transform not only your family, but you can transform any business or your different countries in anywhere you go. So the education that you are getting here at Cornell and this boring speech that I'm giving to you in today, I hope that you take some added value. And the added value is that things can be done. Things can be obtained if you fight that round. And I also, somebody was asking me, who is the most famous Panamanian? I said, gee, that's a tough question. And they say, and then we're talking, you know, Ricky, two Cornell grads that are with me, say, well, I believe it's General Noriega. General Noriega was a guy who was a drug dealer. He had a dictator of Panama. He run that like it was his personal farm. And President Bush had to went into Panama in the year 1989 in order to regain back democracy. And General Noriega, being the most famous person in Panama, is also the icon of things that what you shouldn't do. And the reason why I'm telling you this is because Panama is the first frontier, and the first frontier of the United States. And we are fighting in Panama the drug war for impeding drugs to come into from a drug producing country into the non-drug producing countries. And the fight that we are doing in Panama makes that the streets in the US are safer with less drugs. And in order to follow in that McKinsey report, we needed to have a country that was appealing to people to come. And According to the World Economic Forum, Panama at that time was ranked 59 among the most competitive economies in the world. This year, last year, we ended up 40. Hopefully, at the end of this month, we should be somewhere in the middle 30s. But in order to achieve that, in order to achieve one of the highest growth in foreign direct investment, FDI, in the world, we need to have a country that has the ambience for good quality of life, low crime rate, and take all those competitive advantages that the study of McKinsey gave us and told us. For instance, we have the largest airport in Latin America. We have the largest ports in Latin America. So Panama is an economy based on mobility and transportation. And we were talking today that the amount of money being invested in the United States for the transforming and dredging of all the ports due to the expansion of the Panama Canal is a couple times larger than what is being done in invested in Panama. I was in Miami one time, and the mayor told me, "You are responsible." Me? What? What have I done? I haven't had any traffic violations. I haven't done anything. Say, why is the mayor of Miami telling me I am responsible? Say, well, in a good way. Say, what did I do? Say, no. Based on what you're doing in Panama, we have 22,000 new jobs at the Port of Authority of Miami. Because we are dredging the port, we are expanding, we are giving more concessions, and we are luring the cruise industry to have better facilities. You are responsible. Panama is responsible. Well, I'm happy to be responsible for this because I love to listen to a commentary like the one you are making. We're also, there's a big bridge in New York that is being torn down, and it costs $1 billion. Because if you don't turn now that bridge, Port Elizabeth in New Jersey will go under. Because otherwise, it won't be able to compete with all the other ports that are dredging the ports. So Little Panama has great importance. It's a great importance to not only for the security of the United States, but for mankind. So we need to have a government that is stable, that has economic growth, and like Alvaro was mentioning, Panama is probably the only country in the world that you can open a laptop anywhere you want to, and you have free internet access. And we have been encouraging all our students, and we, as a matter of fact, we paid all our students to go to school. And he mentioned that the dropout rate is very low. So low that we have a problem right now with classrooms that are overcrowded. You know how much is the tuition at the National University of Panama? $26.50 per semester. I am very sure that Cornell is somewhere close to it. But education is the main motive and the main drive that makes a country go forward. You guys are the crown jewels of humanity by studying, because they can take anything that you have, but they can never take what you have in here. And that's all done and acquired in a great place like where you are. And by achieving this great education, I believe that and transforming the curriculum, for instance, let me give you a small dumb example. Do you know how many high school titles were in Panama? 89 different titles. I always thought that you finish high school, you only have one title. I graduated from high school. No, there were so many derivatives of supposed to be a specialization for high school diplomas. What a dumb thing. So dumb that people didn't concentrate in studying the basics. So what the first thing we did, we changed the curriculum in schools. We dropped from 89 to 7. I think 7 or 8. And we are dropping down to have a regular science or commerce. The only way it should be, you know, in a place like Panama, you need to have your school force, because we are a very young country, very young. You know, all countries that have a big Roman Catholic community, they are very young, because you know, by law we cannot. We need to have as many kids as God gives us the opportunity to have. So this, I was telling someone today that we're talking to a professor here, and he was mentioning that he asked me if we had consolidation in all our accounts. And I said, well, let me tell you something. Our Social Security has a surplus in not only in, and we don't have an actuarial deficit as acute as the one that you have in the United States. The day you consolidate the Social Security into the accounts of the government, then we're going to have a problem. The whole world is going to have a problem. So don't do it, please. There was a professor here who was promoting the consolidation of the U.S. accounts. Said, please don't do it, because there are some things that nobody wants to know, and that's one of those things. We don't want to know how big is the actuarial deficit that a country has once you incorporate that actuarial deficit into the national accounts. But the good thing about this is that having a small country, and I'm going to tell you something. I was telling some of the professors. They taught me in school never to micromanage, and they probably tell you that. Well, in government, you have to micromanage, because when people ask me, what's your job, I always say, I'm a glorified secretary. And the reason why I'm a glorified secretary is because I have to be behind all these steps in order to push the process forward. And that's the key of a good management. The key of a good management is not only to delegate on someone else. The key to good management is to delegate on some people who will perform. And one of the main value added that I would like you to have from this presentation is that I would like all of you to get involved into politics. Politics is not as bad as it looks. It's bad. they sometimes ruin your reputation, but that's part of the game. You have to live with it. But the problem in the modern world is that young people like you don't want to get into politics. I strongly recommend you to get into politics. Even if they select you for a job, accept it. Or to run for a public job. And the reason why I'm telling you this is, go back to my initial conversation. I began to run, to go involved in politics because I couldn't trust and I couldn't give away my business to a guy who was running my country. And I put you this thought to your mind. Would you give your company to be run by someone who is in government? I'm not talking about a particular government, any government. If you can give a politician the inheritance of your child, and he's going to be taking good care of it, then if you succeed in achieving that and you believe that he will do it right, then don't get into politics. But if you believe that government can be better, they need people like all of you. All of you need to get involved in politics. This is not the job to send a dumb cousin. This is the job of bright people like all of you. When I ask businessmen, why don't you get into politics? Do you think that by donating some money to a political party, that's all that you need to do? You are wrong. And also another reason why I got into politics was I like to speak a lot. You notice. And I was in a in a wedding. And, you know, weddings, you have nothing else to talk, you know, women talk about somebody, how other women are dressed. You know, we men, we talk about politics or business. And there was a minister of one administration, and he was listening to what we were saying. And he came to us and said, hey, you guys are speaking a lot of BS, and that's not true. What do you mean it's not true? Look, we in government don't pay any attention to what you guys say. We believe that all of you are full of BS, and you believe that by writing an article in a newspaper, that's all that you do for in life, that's all that everybody's going to read, and everybody's going to comply to what you say. You are wrong. The only way that you're going to change society is that you have to get in. You have to make these changes from the inside, because people make the mistakes believing that they want to make changes in government from the outside. You have to be inside. Inside government or inside a civil society organization that has a lot to do, for instance, with that influences government very much. As the world has changed, everything has to do with environment. It's very important. So I encourage you to participate in all aspects that has to protect the environment, because governments take into consideration the opinions of those people. Sometimes we don't take the opinion of the Chamber of Commerce, but we take the opinion of the people who always write, those people that know everything, and they write every week on the newspaper, and they never have anything new. They only criticize and criticize, because there are very many of them in all countries in the world. Or they go to all the talk shows, and they never have anything positive. They're always complaining about something. So talking from the inside perspective, if you want to change the political arena, get involved or participate in organizations that governments do listen to them. People don't listen to what people write in the paper or what they say on television, because they're supposed to, in newspapers, most of the newspapers, they never say anything good about nothing. You know, have you noticed that? They always complain and complain and complain, and they never tell you, well, you are making this mistake by doing this, you should do that. They don't tell you. They only finish in the complaining part. They don't tell you any in the solution part. So if you want to change the environment, the reason is to get involved. And the reason why I began my dissertation by saying that you always have to fight one more round in life. When Noriega was overthrown by the United States, all my business were looted. All. I mean, I didn't have a single penny, and I owe so many millions to so many people, because being in the supermarket business, once they start looting, the first thing they loot is the supermarket. And they hit me. And I was talking to my banker, and I was telling him, hey, Eduardo, it's from Citibank. Gee, I don't know how I'm gonna pay you. I owe you so much money, and look what happened. And then he told me, oh, don't worry, we're gonna help you out, we're gonna refinance the obligations. And then someone right next to it called me, said, Ricky, come over here, let me tell you something. Look, you don't have nothing to worry. What do you mean you have nothing to worry? You have nothing to worry. The ones who have to worry is them, that they have to collect. They are the ones who have to worry about you paying, not you worry about you paying to them. And that did work out, because they had to give me credit in order for me to go back into business and start paying my debts. If I would have not fought that one more round when I was looted, I wouldn't be here. If I would have not fought that one more round when I lost in 2004, I wouldn't be here. I have made many mistakes in my life, but you have to learn from your mistakes. You have to become stronger, and you have to do whatever is necessary to achieve what aim you have in life. So if somebody asks me what that guy spoke, because I have been talking for probably 35, 40 minutes, my time is about almost, it's coming to an end. Please get involved into politics. Please, if you, even a selection, somebody appoints you or running for office. If something goes bad in your life, always fight that one more round. And talking about one more round, there was a very famous fight. It was called the Fight of the Century. There was this guy from the US called Sugar Ray Leonard. And there was this guy from Panama called Roberto Mano de Piedra Duran, Roberto Stonehands Duran. They had three fights. The first fight was won by Duran. The second fight, Duran, in the seventh round, he just threw the gloves and he left. And everybody was choked up. He said, what happened? Why that he's almost winning, why he left? So they came to my office because ESPN is doing a special on Duran and Leonard. Leonard is the perfect gentleman. And Duran hasn't been, he's a little mess. He has behaved a little better now. But he's a very good guy. He's a very good guy and a great fighter and a man with a great heart. But he has his ups and downs in life. For instance, Leonard's net worth is over 100 million. Duran is probably less than minus one or minus two. That gives you the comparison. And they were there, and they were talking, and I was being the translator. And, you know, I always thought that Duran, when he did that, was because he was losing or he felt bad. But at the same time, Leonard was telling me, the one who wanted to do that was me, because that guy has punched me so hard, that I was just about to quit. That was the seventh round. But he did it first. He said, why you did it, Duran? I didn't know I had punched him. I had a stomach ache because the night before, he drank so much. And that's something that nobody knew. I didn't know it. And Leonard on the other side, who won the fight and then won the third match too, and he's a great boxing commentator, he's a great person too, was about to quit, and he didn't quit. In life, you can never quit because you don't know what your adversary is going to do. He may quit first. He may quit ahead of you. And that's what happened in that Duran Leonard. You're going to see it in ESPN probably in the month of July, of August. And it's going to be very good. And I told him, what's the name of this special? Oh, we haven't had a name. And then I told him, fight one more round. He said, that's how it's going to be called. So it's going to be called One More Round, and it's going to be aired on ESPN somewhere at the end of the summer, and I just hope that all of you are able to see it. And I hope that all of you are able to come to Panama. Panama is a small country, it's probably around 4 hours from here, 4 hours and 30 minutes to be more exact. Is the gateway to Latin America. One of the other things we learned from the McKinsey study was that by taking advantage of geographical advantages that Panama has, for instance, let me tell you something that probably none of you know. When 9/11 came, all the internet service of the United States and most of the communications were handled through Panama, because being Panama in their position, most of the big submarine cables that carry the internet are go through Panama, be in the narrow space. And there are five major knots, and three of them go through Panama. And, you know, by having this advantage of being geographic, having a good airport, good port, we are the hub of many multinational companies. So probably some of you in the near future will be involved into coming into Panama, because there's, for instance, Procter & Gamble has well over 1,000 expats working in Panama that serve all Latin America. And very many other companies. I was with a French girl. She was looking. She's going to be somewhere around here. I don't know. She told me she was coming over there. So I didn't know the amount of French companies that had their presence in Panama. Companies like Total, Sanofi's, Mochandon, and many others, because every one of those companies have their executives, and they buy an apartment or rent an apartment, buy a couple cars, they consume, they go to restaurants, hopefully to my supermarket. Sometimes they do, sometimes don't. And they consume. By having that, we need to have the connectivity, and we need to have a good quality of life. In order for that, we need to have a low crime rate, we need to have a good school system, and we need to have a place where people feel not only safe, but with a tax exemption for everything. So another thing I would like to recommend you, and please listen to this speech 150 times, 200 times, memorize it backward and forward. It's 15 minutes long. The Stephen Jobs speech as a commencement speaker at Stanford University called Connecting Dots. In life, everything is about connecting dots. Everything. If I would have not met Alvaro, I wouldn't be here. And I wouldn't have the wonderful opportunity of signing today, first time ever, that Cornell has signed with a foreign government, an agreement whereby Panamanian students can come up for a master's degree program to Cornell. We're gonna take full advantage of it. So don't raise the tuition to these kids over here, because we're gonna send a bunch of folks here. And we are very happy to have signed that agreement. If I would have not met him, and he wouldn't be as energetic as he is, he even has he's a man that I take my hat for him. He's a man who has a blog, and he's collecting money to pay for his tuition and to pay for his expenses. He has three jobs, and his wife has three jobs. He told me what he needs. We're going to supply that to you. You deserve that. But last but not least, that also means that all of you have to donate to him. Because people like him who have that drive to move forward, that drive to be someone in life. He told me he wants to become president of Costa Rica. I told him I'll give him all the free advice that he wants for free. Please, in life, set yourself your objective. Never, never give up. Never. I don't care what happened. Because remember that sometimes when you consult with people, people tend to be negative. They tend to say, can be done. Because change is a very important word. All people like change. You change, I don't change. And change is for you, but not for me. And in life, when you start listening to too many people who don't give you the best and soundest advice, you may get discouraged. Never get discouraged. Always have a second opinion. Same thing with doctors, same thing with friends. Have a second opinion. That always is very good, even with women. Have a second opinion. And that second opinion, and being you guys are the crop of the future, put your objectives very high, move forward. If something happens along the line, pick up your bags and continue fighting. Continue fighting because life is all about fighting. Nothing comes easy. It didn't come easy to any of you to come here. All of you had to study a lot. All of you had to sacrifice many things in order to be here. And you're probably sacrificing many things right now that instead of going to a bar, you're probably studying. Sometimes it's easier to go to a bar than to study. But in life, you gotta have a balance, and that balance is what makes life worthwhile. And in that balance, always remember that we all make mistakes and nobody's perfect. And in that balance, you always put your mindset in what you want. And if something happens, don't worry, you continue fighting. Continue fighting and never give up. Never give up. Because by giving up, you're quitting. And I don't think any of you are quitters. Are you all quitters? Oh, I knew it. So set your objective, go forward, and I would like to thank all of you for the wonderful opportunity, and would like to welcome you to Panama. It's a great place to be, nice weather, very nice beaches. Don't believe it's too hot, because in Panama is the place where you have the air condition at the lowest. You won't feel the difference, because everywhere you go, the air condition is so high. So low that it feels like you need a coat in most of the places. And welcome to come and visit us. I know that we're going to have a great job in order to bring many students to come here. And I know that eventually we will change and transform the life of very many people like Alvaro and many others who will have that opportunity. And please bear in mind that I didn't try to make any commentaries about any policies of the U.S. or any government. I was talking about my government. So I take all the blame. Thank you very much. I have all the time. If somebody wants to ask me any question.
If you can remain in your seats, we're going to respond to one question. I know we're running long on time, but we would truly appreciate it. President Martinelli, thank you so much for joining us here today and imparting your wisdom. You honor us with your insight, and it's truly been an honor to work with you to have this MOU signed and bring these scholarships to Panamanian students. Thank you. In the spirit of education, the question we'll ask this evening is from a student and about the area of education. This question comes from Melania Guerra, an ornithology PhD student. She writes, "I applaud your new effort to bring opportunities to bright Panamanian students to study at Cornell. But how can your country encourage such professionals that have had educational experience abroad to return to their country and avoid the phenomenon of brain drain?"
You know, when people ask me what have I achieved, I only say one thing. I gave back the opportunity of Panamanians to achieve their dreams. Because achieving a dream, being a student, graduating from college, and not thinking that you can go back to your country is very bad. It's a waste of energy, waste of time, waste of money, waste of everything. So countries must have the opportunity to receive all your citizens and citizens from all over in order to have a better place of life. I forgot to tell you that Panama is probably one of the few countries, non-oil producing countries in the world, that has the opportunity of becoming a first world country. Some people call Panama a third world country. Well, I refuse that argument because being in Panama and having the wonderful country that we have, what we need to do is only to balance out the opportunities that before they were for so many few people, and now they are open for everyone else. We have over 5,000 scholarships paid by the government overseas, in foreign universities. For instance, we have an agreement with the University of Arkansas whereby all Panamanian students pay in-state tuition instead of out-of-state tuition. We have an agreement with MIT, Georgia Tech. There are students in universities in Europe, in Madrid, for instance, there is a MBA school that we have close to 60 students. There are quite a few in Harvard, in Yale, and we are giving a scholarship in many variety of fields, like biology or study flowers or whatever. Many things. Many things. So the only reason why we are encouraging people to come is that we have an opportunity. There's opportunity for people to come and have a good quality of life and apply what they are doing. For example, Panama has a very special agreement with the U.S. and we have the opportunity of sending students to the West Point and the Naval Academy. We have probably around 250 graduates from the U.S. Merchant Marine Academy. And that special relationship, and because if I recall my history class, in order to go to West Point, you need to be appointed by your local representative or senator. Well, there are not very many foreigners. Well, Panama, through the ancient relationship that we have, we as Gorn, we select people to come to West Point too. And I'm that person, I don't know if she's from Panama. There are ample opportunities. I am very sure that if she comes, there's something for her to do.
Thank you very much.